John chapter 1, verses 9 through 13 is what we're going to look at this morning with the theme of coming home. So as many of you know, Nathaniel and I traveled to Romania a few weeks ago on a mission trip, and we're going to be talking more about that, but this was my first ever time to cross the Atlantic. All right, first time going to Europe, first time going to Romania for sure. And so I was excited about it, but I was a little bit nervous. It's a long flight and, you know, just a lot of time in a little airplane. But the flight actually went great. Everything was good. Smooth sailing, got there. No major issues. But then the second night we were there, I got really, really sick. Some of you know this already, but it's like the kind of sick that keeps you near the bathroom on both accounts. Let's just put it that way, okay? So it was not a pretty sight, and it's really humbling when you realize that just a few sips of water can take you out like that. Like that's a whole new level. But while I was there in our hotel room, laying on the floor of the bathroom, smelling whatever awful air freshener they had in there, the only thing I could think of, the recurring thought I had in my head was, I just want to be home. Have you ever been sick away from home? Or like traveling somewhere? Like, it's just the worst when you're on the road and you're sick. And I know Courtney sent out a message to some, and some of you are praying for me and praying that I would recover. And I appreciate that. I really, really do. But you know what no one did? Like, no one hopped on a 16-hour flight and came over to Romania and brought me home. In fact, I bet that never even once crossed any of your minds to come and help your pastor get home in his time of need. And so I can tell how much you really love me. I appreciate that. But no, you wouldn't do that. That would be insane, right? That would be ridiculous. That would be so over the top that no one would ever think or expect anyone to do that, and yet, in an exponentially greater way, that's exactly what Jesus did for us. When we were sick, when we were down, when we couldn't fix it and save ourselves, Jesus came to earth. That's what Advent, that's what Christmas is all about. Jesus came to his own to bring us home. He came to his own to bring us home to God. And that's what we're going to look at in the passage this morning. So John 1, starting in verse 9. Says, the true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. First thing we see in the text this morning is that Jesus came home to a wrecked creation. To a wrecked creation. It starts off and it says that the true light is the term that John uses here. And that word true could also be translated real. The real light, or the genuine light in all of its fullness. And so anyone at this time that was reading this book that John wrote, anyone who was familiar with the Old Testament, like the Jews would have been, they would have known that their whole life they've been taught that God's light, God's illumination, comes from the law and from the wisdom books and from the prophets. It comes from God's written word. That's where the light of God came from for them. But now, John says, his word, God's word, has come to earth. Right? That's how he starts his book. That the better, genuine, ultimate light and revelation of God had come to earth. The fullness of his revelation to the world. And this was in contrast to so-called other lights that were already in the world. Just like now, prior to Jesus coming, many people, many men, many religions promised that they were the light that would lead people to God. And many people followed all these other lights, so to speak. Some were partial lights, reflecting part of what God is and says and does, but not the fullness of him. Others were false lights, altogether attempting to steal God's glory and to steal God's worship and lead people away from him. And we can see the same thing still in our world today. There are some partial lights. That could be any spiritual leader or church that's trying to co-opt God's glory for their own personal gain or exaltation. It could also be a legitimate spiritual leader or hero of the faith in your life. That person was only ever meant to be a partial light. Something or someone that points you to the real light of Jesus Christ. But sometimes in our own humanity, we start to take these men or women that have meant something to us spiritually, and we exalt them to a place that they were never meant to be. And then when they finally mess up or fall, and we realize that they're human just like us, all of a sudden we're devastated. Because we were looking to a partial light as if it was the fullness. There's also some false lights in the world today. This would definitely include any religion or faith that doesn't hold to the gospel and proclaim that Jesus is Lord. This also could include cults that try to trick people into believing that they truly follow Jesus when they do not. False lights could also be idols of this world that we worship, things that we run after, things that we desire more than we desire God. Things that we think will make us happy, things that we think will finally satisfy us, but they never do. They're false lights. Or here's the really tricky one. You can even find false lights in the church. False lights of religious activity or man-made traditions that make us think and make us believe that we're following God when in reality we're actually just have a false sense of spirituality because we're doing religious things. John assures us that there's only one true, real, genuine light, and that is Jesus Christ. He goes on to say that this light was coming into the world. So in John's gospel, he uses the word world. Whenever he uses it, it generally has a negative connotation. Speaking of creation, but a creation that is broken, that is wrecked by sin and in rebellion against its creator. That's the world that John's speaking of here. And he says, this light came into that world to give light to everyone, to all men, without distinction. His light came to shine on all mankind and show the reality of what this world really is. You see, light reveals what darkness conceals. Jesus came to reveal what the darkness of this world was concealing in our lives and our hearts. And we know this just like experientially with light, right? You remember like when you were a kid and you would be in your bed at night and the light's off and it's dark in your room and you look over, there's like this big scary shadow in the corner. And you're like, oh, I don't know if that's a I think that's a monster. And then you flip the light on and it's just all the clothes you didn't put in the hamper the night before, right? Like the light reveals what the darkness conceals. I experience the same thing as I'm getting older. We'll travel. We'll go to these hotels and they have these big lighted mirrors in the bathroom. And there's all this light like shining on your face and showing all the gray hair that I can't see any other time. And now the light reveals what the darkness conceals. This is what we know to be true just in our lives. Light gives clarity. It forces us to see the distinction between what is true, what we think is true, and what is really true. Who we think that we are versus who we really are. And it says that this light, that he was in the world. So now the light is a he, it's a person. And he says the world was made through him. And there's only one person who's able to to create the world. It would have to be someone who exists outside of the world. And that, by definition, can only be God. Genesis tells us that God spoke the world into existence. And the one by which he spoke it into existence, John now calls the Word. God the Son, Jesus Christ. God was now in the world. Theologically, we call this the incarnation. God becoming man. And this world that he created through his Word was supposed to be a perfect home. A perfect home where God could dwell with man in perfect harmony, where man could know him, where man could worship him. God created this world to be his home with us. And yet it says, when he came, the world did not know him. The world did not know him because the first man, Adam, rejected him. And he chose to disobey God and worship himself instead. And so he fell out of relationship with God and all of mankind and all of the world with him. One sin wrecked everything. That's all it took. And the relationship between God and man was broken. God's perfect home with us was wrecked by sin. And again, we know this experientially. We feel this every day. That no matter what we get in this world, we're never satisfied. No matter what we achieve, we're never happy. No matter where we go, no matter what we experience, we're never at peace. Because God's home with us is broken, and we can't fix it. But thankfully, God never gave up on his perfect home. Instead, he came down. Jesus came back to his wrecked home, his own wrecked creation, to fix it, to be the light in the darkness. The last several summers, our family has taken a trip to Emerald Isle, North Carolina, for a little beach getaway. And Emerald Isle is this great little barrier island on the coast of North Carolina. It has very minimal commercialization, nice, big, spacious beaches for families, just a really cool spot. But over the years, we've learned that it also has great beaches for sea turtles. And so because the beaches are calm and fairly dark, because there's not a whole lot of lights and commercialization around it, the mama sea turtles come up, they dig a hole, they lay their eggs in it, they cover it up with sand, and then they head back out to sea. And they leave the eggs in the nest there to incubate for about 60 days. And after about 60 days, the little baby sea turtles emerge and they crawl out of the sand and they scamper out to sea. Well, one day we were walking down the beach and there was a group, they had set up like this protective barrier around this sea turtle nest so that it wouldn't be disturbed, and they proceed to tell us that one of the major dangers to the baby sea turtles is that of light pollution. Because when they emerge from the nest, they use the light of the moon and the stars bouncing off of the water to lead them to the ocean. But when there's too much extra light around, like houses or businesses or street lights, they'll crawl towards those lights instead and inland and end up dying either due to exhaustion or predators or some type of accident. Because when they come out, all they know to do is just to go to the light. But the problem is they can't distinguish between the false lights and the true light. And so they just crawl to whatever they see. And the same thing is often true for us as humans. We feel the darkness, we feel the brokenness all around us, and we are desperately searching for light. But in our desperation and in our ignorance, we keep crawling towards false lights that ultimately lead us to death. But this is why Jesus came down to earth, to show us the true light of God and to lead us out of this wrecked, dark home. Jesus was born to be a light in our brokenness. So first we see the light, and then look at verse 11. It says, he came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. So point number two is that Jesus came home to a rejecting people. A rejecting people. It says here that he came to his own, and that could also be translated, he came to his home. And I think it was probably both. Jesus came to a people, and he came to a place. He came to the Jewish people, God's chosen people, and also back to the physical place of Palestine, the promised land that God had given to the Jews. But even though that is true, God always had a much bigger plan and a much bigger vision than just the Jewish people. From the very beginning, when he promised to make Abraham into his chosen nation, he also said this in Genesis 22:18. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. All the nations of the earth, not just the Jewish nation. He had a bigger vision, a bigger plan for the light that was coming into the world. He says the same thing in Isaiah 49:6. He says, it is too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to bring back the preserved of Israel. He says, that's not enough. He says, I will make you as a light for the nations, that my salvation may reach the end of the earth. And so Israel, and in turn its Messiah, Jesus, were also meant to be a light to all nations, to everyone. And therefore, in the bigger scheme of things, all humanity is his own. We are all his image bearers. We're all made to know and to worship God. He came back to his own people, and yet his own people did not receive him. We know historically that the Jews widely rejected Jesus as their Messiah when he came to earth. But long before that happened, all of humanity already had rejected God in our rebellion and in our sin, in our hearts and in our lives. From the moment that we take our very first breath, we start to reject God. We reject his plan and his purpose for our lives. We reject his lordship for our hearts and our souls. We reject the love that he gives, and we pursue other idols to follow and worship instead. This is us, every one of us. We are the people who did not receive him. In Romans, Paul says it like this, chapter 3, verse 10 and 11. None is righteous. No, not one. No one understands. No one seeks for God. On our own, in our natural state, none of us seek for God, because we're lost. We're groping around in the darkness, in our sin and in rebellion against God. And yet, Romans 5:8 tells us that God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While we were still sinners, while we were still in rebellion against him, while we were still stumbling around in the darkness, rejecting him, the light broke through. Christ came home for us to die for us. He came to earth. He was born as a baby. He lived a perfect and sinless life. And then he chose to go to the cross and die a sinner's death. He died in our place for our sin as our substitute. And then he rose back to life 3 days later to shine the light of his grace and his goodness and his forgiveness into our hearts and our lives. To lead a rejecting people back to our perfect home in him. In the United States, we officially entered what we call the Vietnam War on November 1st, 1955. And over the 20-year span of that conflict, we sent over 3 million troops over to that. Some went voluntarily, some were drafted, but every single one went in service to their country to honor and to uphold that which they had been called to do in their service. But we know now that upon their return, most of them were not greeted with a hero's welcome. What they expected did not come to pass. Many people back home in the United States disagreed with the war and took it out on the soldiers. Others didn't disagree with the war, but they felt like it was a disgrace because we couldn't seem to win it. And so from all sides, they received scorn and hate and blame for their service. In fact, they came home to rejection from their very own people. Likewise, when Jesus came down to earth, when he came home to those that he created, those that he loved, he was met with scorn and hate. Those that he came to save rejected him. His people had become his enemies. But here's the real kicker. I think if we asked most of our Vietnam vets if they would still go over and fight for the United States, if they knew how they would be received when they came home, they'd be like, no way. Not worth it. Why would I do that? But Jesus knew exactly what was coming. He knew exactly that he would be rejected long before he ever came down to earth. And yet he came anyways. Because he loves us that much. But the difference is, Jesus never loses. He never lost the war, even in the face of his enemies. In fact, he won the war for those who rejected him. And he arose victorious from their attacks to conquer sin and death and to usher in peace. This is why he came home. Jesus was born to bring peace to his enemies. To bring peace to those who rejected him. Last couple of verses, look at verse 12. It says, but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. Last one, number 3, Jesus came home to rescue his family. It says, but to all who did receive him. So not all hope is lost, right? Some will see the light and turn to the light. Some will receive Jesus. And how do they do this? It says it was those who believed in his name. Friends, if you have not yet received Jesus, you need to know today, this is how you do it. You have to believe in his name, and not just his name like Jesus or Yahweh, not the physical name, but it means to believe in what the name represents. In the ancient Near East, your name was synonymous with your personhood. It stood for your character and the fullness of who you were. And so John, he's not saying, hey, it's not enough to simply believe in the name of Jesus or the story of Jesus, but rather you must believe and respond to the whole person of who Jesus is. We must worship him as God. We must trust him as Savior. We must submit to him as Lord. The fullness of who Jesus is. That's what it means to believe in his name and to receive him. He says, those who receive him, he who gave the right to become children of God. Let me clear something up this morning, because a lot of people, I think, are confused by this, even in the church at times. Not all humans are God's children. All humans are created in his image with value and worth and dignity. All humans are loved by God as his image bearers. All humans are his creation, but not all humans are his children. They're not in the family. In order to become a child of God, he has to give you that right. He has to call you to himself and adopt you into his family. And that right to become a child of God, he says, it does not come by being born of the blood, meaning physical birth. You can't get into the family of God by simply being physically born into a Christian family or into a denomination or into a certain church. It's not physical birth. He says it's not being born by the will of the flesh, meaning the works of man. We can't justify ourselves by the works of the flesh. And it's also, he says, not by the will of man. It's not by our own intellect or desire or decision. He says the only way to obtain the right to become a child of God is to be born of God. Later on, John calls this being born again, the spiritual birth through faith. To be adopted into God's family by grace through the death of Jesus Christ on the cross for your sin and putting your faith in him alone. Only Jesus can rescue his family. And that's precisely what he came home to do. Jesus was born and died so that we could come home to the Father. Jesus came to his own to bring us home. I want to end today with a story from the life of one of our church members. This man in our church, he grew up in the church. He grew up under a strong Christian influence from his parents and especially his grandparents. But when it came time to go away for college, he decided to kind of try his own way, which led to a life of alcohol and drugs and promiscuity. And that continued after college, and he continued to spiral down further and further into this life of sin, cutting off all communication, almost all communication with his family. And he finally hit a low point in his life where he was waking up in random places every morning. He had no one. He had nothing except for the substances that he had been engrossed in. His life seemed hopeless. And then one day, out of the blue, his dad showed up. He said, "Pack your things. You're coming home." And he loaded him up, and he brought him home 1,000 miles across the United States back to the family. And that was a turning point in this man's life. And he said to me, he said, if God had not sent him to me during those times, I for sure would be dead or in jail. Friends, that's the story of Christmas. Jesus came to earth to rescue us and to bring us back home to the family. And without him, we could be imprisoned in our sin. We would be spiritually dead. We would have no hope and no peace. But Jesus came to his own to bring us home to God. And that's why we worship him.